Thank you, Dean Galloway. And now I wonder about doing an introduction, but the man that needs no introduction and why we are all here today, including myself, Professor Frank Parker.
After that very gracious introduction, I think the best thing I could do is sit down. But those of you who know me well, which is practically everybody in this room, knows that that's impossible. Well, it's a rare honor for me to have so many distinguished colleagues here today, and I'll say a few more words about that this evening. But last night, for those of you who attended, was really a festival. And we had everything from country music to jitterbugging and rock and roll music and a few beers and some other nice things going on. Well, I guess you all know who I am, so. yeah. Well, I think it's pretty clear, to me at least, that when Jack Kennedy hosted at the White House the Nobel laureates, he said, probably the greatest concentration of talent and genius in this house, except for perhaps those times when Thomas Jefferson ate alone. And I think we can say the same thing about the talent that we have here today, most likely the greatest concentration of talent on radioactive waste in the world, that have ever assembled in such a small group at one time. So I really do thank all of you for coming and making this possible. I think it's important, and it's, having spent, some of you know, some time in India, it's an auspicious moment because we may well be at a tipping point for what we do in the U.S. and what goes on in the world. There's a confluence of events, and we'll hear a lot about them, I'm sure. And the fact is that there is a license pending, or will be pending, for the Department of Energy for Yucca Mountain. There's been a change in public views on the role of nuclear energy and the attempt to find non-CO2 producing a means of generating electricity, and that we may have a possible nuclear renaissance. And so there's a need for a meeting of the people such as we have in this room to try to help us find the way forward. We should not waste this opportunity. We must be forward-looking. As Santayana said, we must remember the past, but economists have reminded us that these are sunk costs. We're starting fresh every day, just like when we wake up in the morning, we're starting every day fresh. Or I hope so. Though after last night, maybe that's not the case. And this should not be a negative review. We should not dwell on how we got to this point. It's well known to all of us, and it's no help to see how we should go forward. We have to remember the mistakes and not repeat them, of course. But we need to go forward. And we need to be realistic. And one of the major things that we need to do is to recover public trust. Not an easy task. And this meeting itself certainly won't do it alone. But we have to make a start. I hope we'll have very vigorous discussion. And I know we don't have any shrinking violets in this room at all. All of whom are used to the give and take of discussion, and I hope we'll have a very vigorous discussion. And some of you were at the meeting out at the Academy Center out on the West Coast in 1991 when I made some suggestions similar to what we'll hear today, and a man at the back of the room, whom many of you know, got up and said, "You're an agent provocateur, you're trying to kill the program." Was not my intent. It was a chance to see how to go forward, and I hope and trust we'll do better than we did at that time. We do not start from ground zero. There's been an enormous amount of work done for over 50 years, and I want to acknowledge most likely the colleague here who I've worked with the longest time, Art Upton and I were at Oak Ridge back in the 50s. So that's a few years ago. And so I'm pleased to see Art still vigorous and still here. Neither are we bound by what Senator Reid had to say about driving the final nail in the coffin. And this is a blue sky exercise. So this should be no options off the table, except the laws of physics and chemistry, because we know and sometimes in the past they've been ignored. But other than that, everything should be on the table. And it's clear from those of us who've studied this problem that no matter what happens, the law is going to have to be changed if Yucca Mountain is totally successful and goes into operation. It cannot handle all the waste that will be generated by the power plants that are actually in operation now. It's clear that what I show on this slide does not need repeating. Everybody in this room is well aware of it, that there is no way that there can be institutions that can take care of the waste for the time period that we have to consider. And so we have to look at other ways. And we keep hearing about all these dosages that we're going to get a million years from now, which of course is patently nonsensical. We can certainly calculate the concentrations, but we certainly don't know how to calculate the dosages. And I've listed some of the reasons, but all of you know them pretty well, or all the people that have been involved. There's so many things that will change, just the lifestyle changes, just the medical changes, meaning that the dosages that people are calculating today have actually no meaning whatsoever, even though they may be legally required. So the question is, how do public officials explain their agreement to satisfy requirements for control for these long periods when it's patently impossible to do so? This is a difficult political problem. And if I knew the answer to that, I would be making billions of dollars and not standing here. And this, as I said, there's no easy answer. Machiavelli wrote about it 500 years ago, and he was dealing with much simpler problems. And way before Machiavelli, who's relatively a newcomer, Lao Tzu said in the 3rd to the 6th century BC, nobody knows exactly his exact birthday, those who predict don't know, and those who know don't predict. And I think we all need to keep that in mind. So what's the dilemma? How can government officials, and many of them are in for a very short term relative to the problem, how do they admit that they promised to do something that is impossible to do, which the law required them? Don't misunderstand me. The law required them to do it. And if they do admit that the Congress was wrong, the President was wrong, and that they were wrong, what does that do to public trust? So how to make more realistic choices? You know, as we see in all of these campaigns, or when people are charged with different crimes and they try to lie about it, they frequently get convicted of the lies rather than the things that they've done that were not correct. And so admitting the truth obviously is the best way forward, but it certainly increases the mistrust and leads to either further difficulties with the public. So what can we do during this time here? We can address those questions, and I've listed the things that we need to look at. And since everybody has a copy of it, I'm not going to read it, because you can read it and you have it in front of you. But we need to look at the problem in a realistic fashion and what we can really say about what's going to take place over these long time periods. And as I've said in some other public forums, I'm willing to make lots of bets on what's going to happen in a million years, as long as you allow me to hold the stakes. Okay. Back in 1972, in a book, we have a former distinguished, still a very distinguished person, but a former distinguished member of the Resources for the Future. And one of the early books, Milt Russell, of course, I'm referring to, one of the early books was Brubaker's To Live on Earth. And he produced a matrix in that book, which I think is still very valid today. And one of the things he said was, let's look at what is important And many of the things that we consider important are really amenities. I mean, we talk about the dirt and the garbage collection and things of that sort. And then, as you can see, it goes all the way down to what the worst situation is if we affect the ecological system and the Earth's life supportive capacity, because that's the end. And then he looked at the matrix is very, very dense. And so we're not showing that, but I urge any of you who are interested in this problem to look at it. And he said, let's look at all of these things. And he gives appropriate material that fills in this very dense matrix. So what is one possible solution? Some of you may know this book, which actually was published just this last year. Time slips by. It's 2008 now, but it was published in mid-2006. It's called Clumsy Solutions for a Complex World, and it contains many solutions. There are many solutions that suggest this formal optimization methods will not work for these complex problems that continue over such long time periods. And the choice that we have is to continue to try to get an optimal solution when it's not possible, just not technically possible, and certainly not socially desirable. And this is not a new thought. You can go back to Henry James and to Jack London, and they were talking about muddling through. And it doesn't sound elegant, but it's a question of getting the problem done. And I believe this is really the way we have to go. And so I think that we must strive not for technically optimal solutions or economically optimal solutions, but societal optimal solutions. And so I wish you a wonderful, exciting, fruitful 2 days and intellectually and socially challenging environment. Many of you were participants in what I think, and Bill may Kogler, you may want to correct me, because he was one of the main architects of the report as well. And Tom Isaac and a number of other people in this room were members of that, which I think was one of the major contribution to the problem and to the Academy's reputation was the rethinking the high-level waste problem. And I hope that we can come up with enough interesting ideas and enough interesting solutions that we can produce something that will rival the impact that the rethinking had. So I want to finally thank everybody for coming. Look forward to spending time and exchanging ideas with so many friends and colleagues. And I hope you all have a wonderful time here in Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you.